Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 313 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. Send you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
On the first episode of 2017, we are going to be talking about Manchester by the Sea, Skip Trace, The Gift, and my thoughts on Rogue One. Also, trailers for The Lost City of Z, Curse for Wellness, and The All-Nighter. Got somewhat of a short show tonight, but we're going to go ahead and jump right into it. It's nothing wrong. We got a game, too. This or that. We're going to play that a little bit later on. Stick around for that. Yeah, Trevor doesn't know what this one is yet, so I'm going to throw these at you very fast. So we got a fastball round coming up. But first, trivia. This one is a hard one. I didn't get this one. I actually lost this one. There's a couple films released during Christmas weekend, Assassin's Creed and Why Him, and they've both fared about the same at the box office, along with Fences, which has done relatively well. But as far as original properties go, there is only two original properties that have opened up during the Christmas season that were the top earners. One was Avatar. We had $77 million. You know what the second one was? The second highest grossing original property ever released during the Christmas season. Opening weekend. Do you have any clue what this is?
No.
A movie that wasn't based on any existing material, play, book, sequel, things like that.
I don't know. I mean, I take it it's not a Christmas movie.
But it was released during
Christmas Day. I don't know. Maybe it could only be one thing, but I can think of too many. I don't know. What do you got?
Daddy's Home. At $38.4 million released last Christmas.
That's just not something you remember, but I do actually remember. I remember that happening, yeah.
And that it did do very, very well.
Yeah.
It always surprises me that Avatar only, I say only because Star Wars did $247 in its December opening weekend. But it only did $77 million in its opening weekend. I had like a 10-time multiplier, which is crazy, but still. But yeah, Daddy's Home. Yeah, I remember that movie doing very well. I actually liked that movie. Did you like that movie? I can't recall.
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, it was better than I thought it was going to be, right?
Yeah, it was definitely funny. And it was one, as I recall, we talked about it here, and we said that it had a lot of extra stuff in the movie that wasn't in the trailers, which was nice.
Yeah, we appreciated that. Mm-hmm. Always appreciate that, which I thought might have been the case for Office Christmas Party, and it wasn't. It was exactly the opposite. Let's get into the topics here, and I want to briefly touch on Kurt Sutter mentioning that he had been commissioned to write a draft.
This is the Sons of Anarchy guy now, right?
Right. So he wrote Southpaw, which is his first feature film that was released last year.
Wrote a lot of shit, yeah.
I mean, he was approached to do a draft or make a rewrite for Punisher 2, which would eventually become Punisher Warzone, and I don't know. That would have been a good fit. I wonder what his draft looked like. You know, I liked the Hensley one. Didn't really care so much for the Warzone one. Did you like either of these? I mean, they've tried the Punisher three times in the feature film format. And
yeah, I mean, if we're being honest, I'm not a fan of any of them, really. I don't know. I mean, like the Thomas Jane one is what it is, but it's not very good as a movie.
It's a little slow.
Yeah, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. But this, from what Sutter said, he was going against the grain on this one, which is why it didn't get made.
Which is interesting because Jane made that one, that kind of short film where he reprised the Punisher thing. It was very dark and maybe more in the vein of this. So maybe that's what this needed. Although the Thomas Jane one is violent and dark as it was, but I wonder how against the grain you could really go.
But it wasn't violent enough. It was definitely subdued. And Sutter's, I guess, in his own words, says that he takes a lot of liberties with the source material, and that was apparently a no-no, and probably still would be.
Yeah, you can't go out of their Bible of what the character's all about.
Yeah, you can't make up your own version. I mean, you could, but then people would probably not like it as much, you know?
Well, it just doesn't become the Punisher. You just become...
Exactly. You're just kind of just stealing it in a way.
I still would like to have known what that script. I wish they released some of these unused scripts more often on the internet. Sometimes you can find them, like Kevin Smith's
interesting. Yeah.
Version of Superman's out there. But I would love to read what Kurt Sutter had in.
Yeah, because there's no danger in this you know, getting made, or there's no real nothing in it that they would need to hold on to. They're never going to make it.
I wonder if that they use certain things for other movies. So they don't want to give them away, you know?
Well, he said they only had one thing from the script in Warzone, apparently. And it wasn't even a big, I can't remember what it was. So they really just threw out the whole thing.
It was something trivial. It was like a throwaway.
Yeah.
I read that, you know, that John Landis was always infamous for including that "see you next Tuesday" somewhere in his films.
Mm-hmm.
I read that he did that because it was an homage to a short film that he had written in school, or a script that he had written that never got made, that I think was titled "See You Next Tuesday." And every time he stole something from that script and put it in a different movie, he would kind of like credit, yeah, that somewhere in the movie, a piece of it was from this script that never got made. I don't know how much truth is in that, but I thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, how much material could have been in that short
movie? Right, yeah, to supply 13 years of movies, you know. And who'd have thought that his kid is such a, you know, a writing machine lately? I think the guy is writing more. I mean, he's got to be the highest paid screenwriter right now.
Yeah.
Out of all the people writing kind of commercial films. So we'll see what happens with Max Landis's next project. But I was watching a videotape the other day, and which is great to say. And
you got to put them in the player and hit play. If you just watch them, they just sit there.
Yeah, right. I had to put it in and actually hit play physically. On the machine, because there was no remote for it.
You didn't say to it, "Siri, play my VHS tape."
And it just sat there. I don't know what happened. But it had an ad for 777 Film. And do you recall the movie phone? Did you ever use the movie phone?
Of course.
What happened to the good old movie phone? It had me thinking about all those times. A
couple years ago, they shut it down.
Yeah. When did it actually go out? Do you know?
It was like 2014 or something. It wasn't all that long ago. I'm not gonna look it up. You could look it up. I think it was just a couple years ago. Shut it down. Of course, they still have the movie phone website.
Right. Yeah, the movie phone website.
So you can go use that. And I guess that's what everyone uses now, anyhow. So
the phone
numbers. Well, it's interesting. I tried to call the phone number we have here for it because it's there's a local number here, and it doesn't even ring. It doesn't do anything. It's not even the satisfaction of like coming on and telling you movie phone shut down. It's just nothing happens.
It just says stop it and just hangs up on you. My goodness. But yeah, I used this quite a few times. But I mean, back then the idea of, and you couldn't even buy tickets online. That was like a whole different advancement. That was like the first Fandango.
Right. But you could buy tickets over the phone.
I mean, come on. I was not that adventurous.
Nobody ever did that. But you could do that, but no one did it, I know.
Right. That was when they had like the paper bag, the lunch bag. It was like the sock puppet for Fandango. That was like their whole ad campaign in the late 90s. Sitting in the theater. But yeah, 777 Film. I mean, you played for me the infamous Seinfeld skit.
Yeah, it always, whenever anyone talks about this, it just always reminds me of Kramer getting the phone number that's one digit off from their 77 movie phone number and people accidentally calling him and him just giving in and pretending to be the movie phone.
It is
which
a
is
great
hysterical,
bit.
Yeah.
It is fun. And but this was outside of the newspaper, people would say, you know, check your local listings for Showtime was a huge thing that played after every trailer. You knew to check the paper. And if you didn't have access to a paper pre-internet, there was no way to get this kind of information.
Yeah. I mean, even back then, though, to be honest with you, I would look in the paper more than I would ever call the number.
Yeah, this was more of a novelty.
Yeah, it was a real rarity that I would ever call the number because the paper is so much easier and you can see everything and all the theaters all together right there. God, I miss that section of the paper. It's so great. And they were almost like ads, you know, every one had like a different, like, kind of border around it or something.
Some of them
were cheap as shit and it was just lines and that was it. And other ones had like curtains and shit around the movie times. And
the whole movie section of the paper, they have the ads for the movies that had, you know, all
right.
The
ads too.
Anything that was shit just had like, you know, greatest movie of the year. You know, everything was just pumped up to X, Y, and Z. And this is back, you know, talking 80s and 90s here where they'd also have little things about like first 100 people get a free poster tonight, you know, like little extra things that were included on those blurbs. And the best part about the newspaper back then too is you could see what movie you could sneak into and how you could coordinate that whole situation.
I don't even know if they have the movie times in the newspapers now at all?
You know, I haven't seen a physical newspaper in a long time, to be honest with you. So
I'm wondering if they've removed that section entirely, you know, if they even bother.
Down the street. Maybe I should check into it. But yeah, good old 77 Film. I mean, this is that had to have gone for at least a decade. strong mm-hmm. before the internet overtook it.
Yeah, and it was always interesting because you called up and you know it was a recording. It was like one of the first, I don't know, computerized things that we really got to deal with.
It was,
you know,
like
it was exciting and cool. Yeah. And it had that guy's voice and he sounded like kind of a robot, but it was obviously a guy. It was a recording, you know, but he kind of sounded like a robot, didn't he?
I always envisioned
he was
Johnny
like the
Cab
first Siri.
The cab in Total Recall. That's who they were talking.
Yeah, exactly. It was like
day,
that.
Yeah. About Force Awakenings. Let's talk about Star Wars here. Did you know that The Force Awakening turned out to be the 10th highest grossing film of 2016? Let's put that into perspective. The movie came out.
Would that really be a hard thing to do, though?
But it grossed so much in its opening weekend and in its second weekend that by the time January 1st kicked around, all that goes toward 2016.
There were quite a few 2016 movies that broke out.
I mean, the top grossing film of the year turns out to be another Star Wars film at this point, even mm-hmm. though it's not being counted that way because some of it's now counting towards January of 2017, and they're counting Finding Dory.
Well, it just depends on whose count you look at.
I mean, you see, obviously, Dory, Captain America. These are all Disney Marvel titles, mm-hmm. and it's quite unbelievable how kind of a year they had, and the 2016 for them was just unbelievable. Secret Life of Pets did very, very well too. Universal has actually had a hell of a run with their animated division, Sing and Pets. Did you see Pets? Did you like Pets?
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. Well, at least you're honest about it.
So, yeah.
All right, let's move on and let's do this or that. This is a new thing I'm going to throw at you. Sound so excited.
I don't know if I want it.
So it's like me telling, no, Harry, we're going to go to the cinema tonight. We're going to go see something new. A little art house stuff. I'm going to name two movies, and you're going to tell me which one you prefer over the other, and I'm going to just kind of throw them at you fairly rapid style, so you just give them to me off the top of your head. You ready for this? You got 9 films, actually 18.
Okay. What does this do? Is this like a Cosmo test?
Exactly.
Are you going to tell me what my favorite color is? Like what kind of, like if I was a Thundercat, which Thundercat I would be? What is this quiz for?
No, you're going to be Rainbow Dash. It's a little pony situation. So I just want to see if we're going to be the same ponies friends together. All right, you ready for this?
All right.
I want to see if it lines up with what I think. All right. Fire Down Below or Double Team? Come on. Give it to me.
Double Team.
Mars Attacks or Eight-Legged Freaks?
Yeah,
come on.
Okay, I'm going to say Mars Attacks.
All right. Scream or Scream 2?
God damn. It's not that this is hard, but holy shit. Scream 2.
Thin Red Line or Saving Private Ryan?
Saving Private Ryan.
Street Fighter 94 or Street Fighter 2009?
What's the 2009 one?
The one with the girl.
The Chun-Li one?
Yep.
Well, I'm going to say Chun-Li.
Oh, we will talk. Excalibur or King Arthur?
Shit, King Arthur?
Matrix 2 or Matrix 3?
Really? Matrix 2.
Con Air or Gone in 60 Seconds?
Con Air.
And Underworld or Resident Evil?
Underworld.
All right. I think we're fairly close on this.
That was
harder
like,
than you thought, huh?
Why were they? Yeah. Those were too close of movies.
That's the whole point.
That was
so similar. So let's go through this together.
On a different day, I could have answered differently.
I think you might.
That's how close that was.
Let's re-examine
this. What the hell?
So
what's the judging criteria here?
Just what you prefer over the other one. Split decision, you know?
So there's no right answer.
No, there's no right. Just what you prefer.
We were going by like tomato meter or anything.
No, I want to see if it matches up with what I think on these, because these movies are fairly similar in context or kind of genre or whatever that may be. So let's go through this together. So we got Fire Down Below or Double Team, two 1997 films, one with Seagal, one with Van Damme, both at the end of their careers. Which one did you pick? You said Double Team?
I picked Double Team.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think it has way more energy and way funner.
Well, I don't know. I mean, what do you put Fire Down Below against that it beats?
Nothing.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know who would pick Fire Down Below.
They just came out the same year, and they were kind of both in the same points mm-hmm. in their career at that point, in their stardom. All right, next we have Mars Attack versus Eight-Legged Freaks. You said
Mars Attacks.
I would go Eight-Legged Freaks in this one, just because I think that Eight-Legged Freaks is trying to do the same. They're both trying to do the same thing and lampoon the same style, but I always thought Eight-Legged Freaks was actually funnier than Mars Attacks.
I mean, I would disagree. As an outright comedy, I would say Mars Attacks is much funnier. Eight-Legged Freaks is more action-oriented, really. I like Eight-Legged Freaks a lot, so I don't know. I mean, that's a close one for
me.
Yeah,
very close. That's a thin line right there.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, I think Mars Attacks is a broader movie.
We said Scream or Scream 2?
Scream 2.
Yeah, I agree. I actually think it's a stronger movie story-wise.
Yeah, but the first one's...
It's so inventive at the time.
It's really hard to do, you know, the first and then a sequel, because I usually prefer the sequel, but the sequel only works because the first exists.
Agreed.
So that's tough.
And the first one was so good at the time, was so new, but yeah. That second one was such a great follow-up that I really loved the opening sequence too. It set the stage for the whole movie. All right, this one's fairly easy. Thin Red Line or Saving Private Ryan. You said Private Ryan. Mm-hmm. I, of course, agree with you, although I do think the Thin Red Line is unfairly overlooked. And if it had come out years before Private Ryan, it probably would have been heralded as even more of a classic. All right, Street Fighter 2009 versus Street Fighter 1994, Van Damme or Chun-Li. You said Chun-Li.
It's a better movie.
These are both atrocious movies, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... You're the one that picked them.
I know, but still...
It is a better movie. It's just a better movie, you know? It's more of a movie, certainly. The Van Damme Street Fighter movie is just...
It's a cartoon.
I mean, atrocious is a word that doesn't even really describe how bad that is. It's a train wreck. I don't know.
It was so bad that in 1995, Mortal Kombat came out. It just made that movie look so much better.
And yeah, Mortal Kombat's thinking, terrible.
Yeah, it is now, especially when you go back. Even mm-hmm. The second one's even worse. But the first one is bad. But when it came out, I remember thinking like, well, at least it's a movie. Like that, it's not mm-hmm. just like a joke of itself.
That's so. What I'm saying about the Chun-Li thing. It's at least it's a better movie. It's at least a story, and you can follow it, and you know whether you like it or not. I don't.
All right,
I don't
next.
Know, but
Excalibur or King Arthur?
And I said King Arthur.
I got to go Excalibur on this one, just for the surreal aspect. I always kind of like the oddly cerebral John Borman approach, although I do. Think that there are some sequences in Fuqua's King Arthur that do work.
Mm-hmm.
You don't like Excalibur? You're not a fan?
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay. I don't have anything necessarily against it.
It's a bit theatrical.
Yeah.
All right. Next, we have Matrix 2 or Matrix 3.
And I said Matrix 2.
I got to say Matrix 3 just because I do like Matrix 2. I think it maybe isn't as bad as everyone thought remembered it being, but Matrix 3 was a lot of action, from what I recall. And
well,
I always kind of preferred this one.
Second one, but at least the second one is open-ended, so it gives you them a chance to recover. And the third one just sucks ass all the way to the end.
Well, you're saying it was a downhill slope, and they never recovered on that.
Yeah, so you can't win.
This one, I think, is actually the hardest question on the night, and that is Con Air versus Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah.
This is, to me, the closest toss-up we have, and talk about a razor's
edge. I said Con Air, but a tear fell down my cheek as I saw Gone in 60 Seconds go away. I was like, no.
It was, yeah, no, I'm telling you.
Such a great movie, both of them. But I think in the end, I think Con Air is more iconic and probably really just slightly a better movie.
I think it's just a hair more a funner.
Yeah.
The only way I can describe it.
Well, there are moments in Con Air that that you don't necessarily get in Gone in 60 Seconds. You get different moments, but there are certain things in Con Air. And maybe it just comes down to direction. I don't know.
I think also the cast, because everybody's such a face in it, and they're so good at what they're doing.
Yeah, there are a couple of exchanges that are really, really good.
And next we have Underworld or Resident Evil. This is just the first one in each series. And you picked?
I picked Underworld, but I really like Resident Evil.
Yeah, I think I got to split with you on this and go Resident Evil just because I like
that
world a little bit better than the Underworld world. Although the filmmaking on both is pretty good in both cases for this first entry on both these franchises.
Well, I mean, the other flip point is, you know, Underworld 2 or Resident Evil 2. And I think with flying colors, Underworld 2.
Underworld 2, yeah, on that one. Maybe Underworld 3 versus Underworld 8, Resident Evil 3. Although that was the Vegas one, right?
Resident Evil.
Extinction? I
kind of
like
that. I kind of like all the Resident Evils, and some of them are fucking absolutely horrendous. Like the second one, I really didn't like the fourth one. But then again, you liked
some of those later ones, too.
Or the fifth
one,
I can't
recall which one.
It's hard for me because I do, like you say, I do like that world. And so even when things get complex, probably too much for it, it's still fun.
All right. Well, that was this or that, something we're going to be throwing at Trevor. And I like that you responded the way you did there. It was a little harder than you thought it was going to be, huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Good.
I don't want to make those decisions.
I don't want to be forced to make these kind of decisions.
This is like Desert Island. I don't want to just take some of these. Can I just take them all?
I want to know who we're voting off right now, sir. We're moving and we can't take all this shit. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with reviews for Manchester by the Sea and Skip Trace.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Go to moviemavericks.com for all your movie needs. It's pretty, like me.
MovieMavericks.com.
Can someone tell me what the hell a movie maverick is?
If you guys haven't done so, go to iTunes, rate the show, review the show, positive or negative. Let's get the word out there and more listeners. What were you going to say?
Nothing. I was agreeing with The Rock. I was just ready to go into reviews. And
I'm ready to know what the hell a movie maverick is. All right, let's talk about Skip Trace. New to Netflix. Rennie Harlan's.
Do we have to?
Let's talk about this because this was a huge hit over there in China. This opened up with $66 million
in
the box
office.
Why. Made almost $200 million. This is a huge hit with Rennie Harlan directing, Johnny Knoxville and Jackie Chan. It's almost unwatchable, man.
Yeah, I mean, did you wind up seeing this?
I saw three quarters of it and I fell asleep because I'm so disinterested in it. But it's
the first act is just terrible. I mean, this movie sets up nothing and does so in such a laborious, pain in the ass way. And for me, the movie really didn't start or really show its true colors until you had Johnny Knoxville doing not even then, that whole intro was confusing. It wasn't until they got into the factory where Jackie Chan showed up to steal him away, and then they started doing some jackass type stunts with him, put him in a barrel, roll him down, you know, the whole thing in the factory. Suddenly the tone got a lot lighter. It became a family comedy.
Yeah, I did.
And that's when I realized, oh, this was the movie. I don't know what the hell the beginning is. It totally ruins the entire movie. You know, we don't need any of that beginning. It makes no sense whatsoever.
I don't know how the Chinese film system works, if it's much like the Hollywood film system, but it almost feels like they went in after the fact and said, make that first act a little bit more action-packed, and then we can show our true hand that it's a family film. Because there's nothing in this that shows you that this is kind of a PG kind of comedy. That's really what this is a PG comedy.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt.
This is very, very lighthearted. I mean, a lot of the Jackie Chan stuff was lighthearted back in the day, Rumble in the Bronx and First Strike, but this is particularly lighthearted, like Spy Next Door type lighthearted, I thought.
Right. Spy Next, is that what that one's called?
Yeah, Spy Next Door.
I mean, that one I actually liked.
But that was done with some grace and, you know, with people behind it that had done that genre very well. And Rennie Harlan has never done this type of film before. I know you don't like Harlan at all, but I think he's done some good movies.
I'm getting, I used to think that. But I'm beginning to fear that I was wrong all along because I just keep seeing them and I'm just like, good Lord. Like, there's just huge flaws in them. Typically in the first act, they're just terrible.
Did you ever see Devil's Pass?
Yeah, no, I haven't. So.
I liked that one. It was a little smaller film he had done for horror aficionados. And I have his first film I've never seen. I have it on VHS called Born American. I always wanted to watch this from the early 80s about some guys that are trying to get back into the USA. And but Harlan came from that horror background with Nightmare on Elm Street, but has never really touched it again outside of that Devil's Pass. And I think maybe
he did
The Exorcist. That's right. Yeah. But that was such a strange situation. And I always preferred his version. I mean, let's be honest. Paul Schrader's version sucked.
Yeah, I mean, we can be honest about that. But, you know, to be fair, the Rennie Harlan one sucks too.
Right.
So, but the Schrader one's fucking unbearably bad.
Yeah. pretentious, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, Harlan's never pretentious. He just... He's fine for an action director and whatnot, but the minute he tries to do anything with story, it just seems to fall apart. Like, he doesn't understand the structure of it or how to build up a good story. And that was my problem with Cliffhanger at the end, too, was that, you know, the whole thing with him dropping the girl, they made a big to-do about it, and really it just has no place in the movie. It doesn't belong in that movie. The entire first act of Cliffhanger is fucking useless. It has nothing to do with any of the rest of the movie. Why is that in there?
To just grab the audience, to give you a wow
terrible,
moment.
Terrible, though. I mean, could you imagine... what was that helicopter ride back like? That's what I want to know. Like, it just ends that scene with, like, Rooker's, like, just fucking, like, cut this wire, basically, and fucking let Stallone just fall to his death. I fucking hate this guy. Stallone had to crawl back over across that wire and get in that fucking helicopter, and they had to ride back to the fucking station.
We don't think about such things in an action film, sir. You want that kind of particulars, you watch a drama. Well, hey, I saw a drama this weekend, and it's one of the highest rated dramas of the year. Casey Affleck just won Best Actor at the Golden Globes for it, and that is Manchester by the Sea. And as everyone's saying, 4 stars, one of the best films of the year, you know, great humor in it to lighten up all this very heavy material. I got to say, man, this is a 2-star movie. I think this is an extremely, extremely overrated film. The person I was with did not like this at all. We thought that, I mean, for a 2-hour and 20-minute movie, this is the kind of movie that actors take 15-second pauses and look around days before they answer one another. So this movie compressed could have been about 97 minutes long. I swear to you, if they could have edited this thing a little tighter. And not only that, it's very meandering, and it's supposed to be this character study. But it's just, in a lot of ways, it does not work. There's not a clear resolution. It's just sloppy to me. It feels unfinished.
So if Matt Damon had been in it, would it be better?
I like Casey Affleck a lot. And I think he's actually a funny guy. And I kind of waited for that humor to shine, and it never comes through. And it's just not, it's the kind of movie that people that aren't necessarily cinema people will say, hey, we should go see this movie because it's got all these great ratings and it's winning all these awards and they're saying it could be up for Best Picture or it might be or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they go see it and they go, what the fuck was that? This is why we don't watch the Oscars. This is why we don't do this. It gives the Oscar movies, the whole kind of subgenre, a bad name, in my opinion. It's the kind of shit you would you see and go, oh yeah, no wonder this is sweeping film festivals. Because it's, you know, it deals with death and it's got, you know, some teenage angst in it and it's got a troubled character and it's nothing you haven't seen before, honestly. That's the best way I can describe it.
Well, if you're having trouble with that one, I would recommend a 10-year-old movie directed by Buscemi that Affleck was in called Lonesome Jim that I liked quite a bit, and it's an indie flick.
Never saw that one, actually.
But I like that one a lot, yeah. It's,
Buscemi directed it?
Steve Buscemi directed it, and it's directed nicely. But it's definitely an indie movie, so it has that whole feel with it. It's Casey Affleck, and Liv Tyler is the girl in it, so there you go, indie movie.
Well, to talk for recommendations, for one, Steve Buscemi directed a great movie back, I think in 96, called Trees Lounge, one of the best movies I've ever seen about bar life and people that attend bars. But also, to speak of a movie that deals with loss and a cold winter and the town's kind of attitude towards one another, Adam McGoyan's The Sweet Hereafter is one of the best movies I've ever seen dealing with this subject.
That movie's mesmerizing, would be the way I say, especially the direction, but the sound. With some of the shots and stuff,
and
especially
editing.
That bus, that slow build throughout the whole movie, the bus going over the cliff, and yeah, and just the townspeople and stuff, you know, what's his name?
You have Ian Holm.
Ian Holm, so good in it as that
done.
That insurance guy. He's almost, he might as well be a private eye. You know, it's really, really good movie.
Who's having a hell of a time with his family at home, which juxtaposition with what's going on. You know,
his
daughter on drugs and.
Kid's dead.
Yeah, so that movie right
there.
Well,
the weirdest death probably I've seen in a movie, really.
The problem with that kind of stuff is that we've seen a lot of movies. You know, between you and I, we've seen thousands and thousands of movies. So you start seeing something that's really heralded. You go, well, I've seen it done, this subject tackled in a much more interesting way in this movie that got overlooked 20 years ago. But you sound like such a pretentious asshole when you bring that up to people. But you've seen this movie, so you know what I'm talking about. And I would love for you to see Manchester. It'll be on Amazon soon because it's an Amazon film. It really deserves to be seen on that kind of thing where you can be at home with it because it's maudlin and it's very self-important and takes its time. It really does take its time to get, you know, to tell a very, very simple story. And, you know, you have a lead character who's torturing himself. And then when you find out exactly what he's torturing himself about, you go, well, why are you torturing yourself? That's why. So I'll get off my soapbox now. All right, let's talk Rogue One. I caught it. You've seen it.
You caught the bug?
I finally caught. No, what happened is somebody caught the bug and threw up in the theater behind me when I went and saw a movie the other night. So I went and sat in Rogue One instead. So I inadvertently, I was going to let this one pass. That's how disinterested I was in Star Wars. And
well, you finally saw it. You stayed awake the whole time.
I stayed awake the whole time. I swear to God.
What did you think of it?
I wasn't impressed. I mean, it's.
I know.
But like, I liked The Force Awakening a lot better.
I know, right? Doesn't that hurt you? Like, that really hurts me when I think about that in the end, especially when after seeing the trailers for this and then realizing that The Force Awakens, which just really annoyed me, I actually like better than this. Like, this one didn't even offend me that much. That's how less of anything was in it.
The Force Awakens is at least a good Star Wars sequel. This, to me, was something that was an afterthought. And the characters in it, I didn't give a shit about. And I don't not necessarily mean a shit about, but I had a hard time remembering names. And by the time I walked out of The Force Awakens, I remembered every character of importance name, who this person was, where they were trying to go ultimately, what this was happening in the greater universe of it all. And by the time this whole, you know, I wouldn't give away a spoiler, it's been out and released for so long. By the time that they die on the beach, I just thought, wow, we have spent an hour, this first hour, going around in a circle just to get them to this point where now they're going to spend the next hour of this movie fucking around just to get to this point. You know, and it just felt like much ado about nothing.
Well, how do you feel about reading all the things that, you know, Edwards is saying about, oh, well, we shot this, but it was never meant to be in the movie. And people are saying, oh, there's at least three different movies in here. You know, there's like, you know, 20 hours of fucking footage for this thing. And that's when you begin to realize.
That don't make any sense.
But isn't that why you understand, like, now, complete after reading that, like, why this movie is edited the way that it is? And it's just terrible.
It makes no sense.
They do. There's missing scenes, man.
At one point when he says to her, when she meets up with Forrest Whitaker's character, and he says to her, like, were you sitting here? As you know, as a clone, that hint of paranoia was the most intriguing thing that character did the whole time. And I felt like there was an extra.
Why was that character so useless, though?
First of all, he was useless.
He didn't do anything, right? He was just there.
So was Donnie Yen. So was the Samoan character.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at this.
Well, the only person who I thought had a justified death and everything was the fucking robot.
Yeah.
I mean, that robot's death scene was the one that I was like, yeah, all right.
Well, it was earned at least. Mm-hmm. And why would I care? First of all, why are they all together? Why are they thrown together? Why should they be banded together?
Why does the guy fall in love with her? Just all of a sudden, he's like, I'm a killer. Like, we do what it takes. Like, that's kind of like the message of this movie is do whatever it takes. And then he goes off with Jin. He's like, oh, but Jin, I will follow you to the ends of the world. It's like, what do you mean? What happened to whatever it takes?
I don't want
to
bang up on it too bad because I didn't think it was the worst movie of the year by any imagination. I thought it was actually fairly solid.
I don't know, man. I think it might be.
I don't think so. I thought it was at least a disappointing, rather unspectacular.
But you could really tear it apart. I mean, there may be a movie shot there that's decent, but the movie that I saw wasn't decent. It was just shots. It was just a thing.
It was fairly sad to see them lagging behind what Marvel is doing so effortlessly,
right?
With Rogue One. So that to me was like, ooh,
that's what I felt too.
Let's not hit the DC territory here because you're about one step away from that with Rogue One. And I particularly was not fond of the music by Michael Giacchino, who I usually love his work, especially with
J.J.
Abrams.
You wanted Star Wars music, I know. That was the thing that I thought.
It sounded like second rate Star Wars music. It sounded like the HBO TV movie version of Star Wars.
Well, you don't know what you have till it's gone, right? Because I wanted a fucking opening crawl and I wanted fucking Star Wars music.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, the minute that movie started, I was like, ooh, mistake. I really want that.
Strong suits, though. I got to say, strong suits. I did like that it did look part of the world of the first film.
It
I did
looks
like
beautiful.
That.
Yeah.
I did like the fact that Darth Vader had a menacing presence in this movie again, that he wasn't some sort of...
I don't know. I kind of felt like they just inserted him, though.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is inserted. I mean, we're talking about plugging things in into a sentence
it is
and
true.
A scroll.
I was just let down by his involvement. I was like, they could have done better than that. What'd you think about the CGI characters? I mean, they don't look real, but do they look real enough?
They didn't bother me. I mean, I like Ben.
They didn't bother me as much.
I really liked the bad guy, Ben Mendelsohn's character. I really liked what he was doing in that role. I wish he would actually had a bigger role in the film. I thought Jin was a bit of a letdown. And Diego Luna, who I know is now kind of the flavor du jour after, retaining his accent in the Star Wars universe, which... really isn't all that spectacular.
Doesn't make any sense either. Yeah,
if you really think about it, with anything going on. But hey, it's a new thing. And as I'm watching the film, I'm just looking at. I'm going, well, this movie has been now calculated to the point where we have, an English speaking white female. We have a Latin character. We have an Asian character. We look like we have like a Samoan type Eastern Islander character. We have an Arabian character, Arabic character. Everyone's equally represented here. This is just meant to be digested worldwide and create as little controversy as possible. And it just felt all too safe is the best way to describe it. And I felt like in a strange way that The Force Awakens took a lot more chances. And I respect it for that.
I agree.
All right, let's get on.
I just want to stop talking about it.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We could go on forever. I really could because it's a movie that you just...
It made me hungry
wish
for
was
the next
so films. Much better... Yeah, but my hunger is going to end pretty quickly if they keep doing this.
I want to see what they're going to do with the canon, with the actual canon stuff, with
well,
what
me
we
too.
Have like, in the through line.
But we'll see. Yeah, especially now that we're switching off. You know, I like that we're switching off directors.
Yeah, so do I. So do I. Especially with Abrams saying that he's no longer going to do any sequels or reboots. And good for him. I mean, I want to see what material you have because I'm interested. And speaking of Damien Chazelle, who did a. Who just won for Ella La La Land and Best Screenplay for the Golden Globes. He was part of the writing team.
Did you say Ella La La Land?
La La Land.
Ella La La Land.
Part of the writing team for 10 Cloverfield Lane. And I think that's why that script was so effective too. That he's a good writer. All right, let's talk The Gift. Have you seen The Gift?
Yeah, you're talking about when Katie Holmes shows her boobs. Of course, everyone sees The Gift.
Is that a Sam Raimi movie?
That's a terrible movie, yeah. I don't know if it's directed. No, actually, I think it is directed by Sam Raimi.
He did a couple of those that kind of flew under the radar. That one wasn't very good, but you know
it's not very good.
A Simple Plan was very good, and that one flew under the radar. Yeah. And so is Drag Me to Hell, which I know you like.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
But let's talk The Gift. This is the one with Jason Bateman and Joel Edgerton, written and directed by Joel Edgerton. You seen this one?
I have not, but... Edgerton is your guy, so.
Edgerton's on
how'd
like
he do?
Written and directed very, very simply. This is a small, small movie, and it's open-ended, and I'll say that The Gift
has... Do we
has,
know? Does it say what the guy... What happened?
Is? Yeah, well, it takes its time kind spelling of. It out. That's the one problem with this movie. Well, there's many problems, but one of the problems is that it takes a little bit too long to spell out really what's
well,
going on.
Gave the... I mean, did Jason Bateman, like, fuck this guy or what?
Well, that's, he does get it? A little... Let's get into some weird territory. I'm not going to...
I
want to like
know without
D-train,
watching it. I don't think I really want to watch it.
I think you should see this movie because it does have... First of all, it's Blumhouse Productions, so it has a kind of a strong horror film element to it, even though it's an action thriller.
Uh-huh.
Or really dramatic thriller, I should say. But there are shots in this that are straight out of horror movies. Things going over characters' necks and kind of peeping Toms. And Edgerton is a fucking creepy dude. But I really like Bateman in this movie playing the prick. Kind of the best way to describe it is kind of the Tom Cruise role. Cruise would have been great in this role, but they got Bateman, and he's kind of the cocky, the guy who always wins. He's got your number. He's nice to your face, but he's kind of dismissive too. And Bateman really runs with it here. And Edgerton takes the punishment, and you feel for him, but at the same time, you know this dude is one step away from snapping. And you know you're working right now on a screenplay that's a suspense thriller, and this has a lot of elements that are very in line with the atmosphere you've been talking about to me lately. So I was reminded of what you and I have been talking about as I watched this film, and I think it's worth a view. I think you should check it out just for what you think about the ending, because I can't really, it's a bit open ended as what The Gift is, and I didn't call it, and I'm wondering if you did, and it's a bit out there, so and it's open to interpretation if The Gift is present or not, to say the least.
Okay.
So I give this one moderate recommendation.
This is on Netflix or something now,
this
right?
This is on Showtime anytime right now.
Showtime?
Yeah. Showtime streaming app. That's where I saw it on.
Okay.
Tell me about spectral. This isn't like pectoral. This is like...
Well, it could be pectoral if you want. I mean, that's what you're looking for. We're selling it.
This is a Netflix show, though, right? Sci-fi show?
Yeah, this is the Universal, Legendary Pictures movie that they pulled suddenly from theaters last year. It's supposed to come out last summer. And it said showed up on Netflix, which I'm so very confused about. But it's a big budget movie, and it really looks like it. And it's actually really good. It's really well directed. I'm not going to say that, you know, it's exactly has a storyline that's amazing or anything, but it works. It flows super quickly. It's stupid, you know. It's spectral. It's about ghosts and their fight. Well, it's not really about ghosts. You got to watch the movie. But they fight and they're kind of in the future, and they fight these ghost things. And so it's silly. They have silly science and whatnot, you know, in it. They build different types of weapons to fight them. You know, there's like suit up scenes. Exactly. It's very fun. I mean, the action is so well directed. The special effects are fantastic. And it's a movie that just moves, like no matter how stupid it is. And then the next scene, you know, you're onto it. You can just keep going on. Like, it doesn't give you a chance to really sit there and think, well, that doesn't make any sense. They just go, oh, no, this is the world we live in. It's crazy.
It basically looked like an action film mixed with Ghostbusters to me.
Yeah. Well, you remember, what was the movie with the lightning, the aliens? They came in lightning.
Oh, that War of the Worlds.
Do you remember that? No, it's not War of the Worlds. It had the guy from the Terminator kid in it.
Yeah, Edward Furlong was in it.
What
I
the hell
talking
was
about.
That movie
I can't
called?
Think of it. It wasn't Darkening Sky, but it was something like
it was
that.
Something it was, like that. I mean, this movie is very much like that. So it's like that same kind of idea. I don't know if anyone... I may be the only person that saw that. So.
This was a big-budget film that was slated for release, like you said. And the directors of Kon-Tiki were going to direct this, but they were actually left the project to go do the new Pirates of the Caribbean. This guy, Nick Mateo, first-time director, stepped in. I think he's a special effects pro. And it has a decent cast in here. I mean, mostly guys that were in Pacific Rim, strangely enough. James Badge-Dale and Max Martini. But Bruce Greenwood's in this, obviously. Clayne Crawford, who's in Lethal Weapon, is in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has a great cast.
Yeah, so this totally was slated. I mean, I wonder what the budget
Emily
was.
Mortimer, yeah. It was like a $70 million budget. It was a big movie. It was supposed to come out in the middle of summer, like I say. So I'm very confused as to how... I mean, what did Netflix pay for this movie? Because I can tell you, I don't know. I mean, you'd have to cover all that cost to make a sale to Netflix make sense. And... they must have thought, honestly, and probably rightly so, that there was no way they were going to recover that production and advertising costs in theaters. And I don't think they would have come even close. This movie is not that good, you know. Like, I would not have gone
wide scale with all the sci-fi.
Probably
hits.
Not. It's not. You know, this is no different than a lot of those movies they tried to come out with last decade. You know, it was the one Battle Los Angeles, that kind of shit. It's really very similar to all that. Like, and I just listed that other one that we were talking about, The Lightning. I can't remember what the hell that one's called, but it did poorly as well, you know. And this probably would have done, even though it's better than both those, you know, I probably would have done just as poorly. And I also don't know that this isn't better because I watched it in a setting that was appropriate for it in my home, which this just felt right on that small screen.
I'm looking at Edward Furlong's filmography, and I don't know what the fuck you are talking about here with this.
Well, it may not have been. I can't remember who was in it.
Was it Darkening Sky? Was it the?
Oh,
was it the kid from Boy Meets World?
No. That wasn't it. What, Ryder Strong? No. Darkening Sky is.
How the fuck did you know that kid's name? You put that in your mental Rolodex.
It wasn't Darkening Sky. It
not
was
Chronicle, and I mean
no. I'm just never gonna remember what it was called at this point. I don't even think Edward Furlong was in it. I'm not even sure anymore.
Yeah, we're just gonna let that one slide.
But you know what I'm talking about. You remember that movie, right?
Yeah, I do recall it. I just can't recall.
There was lightning. They couldn't see the things, and they were like made out of electricity, and they came and they attacked him. And this is the same basic movie as that. So I can't remember who was in it, but it was someone like Edward Furlong if it wasn't him.
So you're recommending it?
Yeah, I definitely recommend this. You know, give this a watch if you're an action sci-fi fan. Watch it. You know, I think everyone will like it.
Is this your streaming online pick of the week?
Sure.
All right, that's easy enough. He says sure.
Sure.
My streaming online pick of the week is Dog Eat Dog, the Nicolas Cage film that is available. Paul Schrader directed, William Dafoe co-stars in it. I'm almost done watching it, so I will give you my full review. But so far, it's a pretty fun little
Darkest Hour.
Darkest Alley.
Darkest Hour. Has Emile Hirsch is in it. That's who it is.
Who we'll talk about in our trailer attic portion.
Yes, that's who it is. And Joel Kinnaman was in that. Huh, interesting. Whatever. It's not a very good movie. I don't recommend that one.
let's do The Addict.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay.
All right, we are talking about Emile Hirsch. Let's talk about The All-Nighter, the new film with Emile Hirsch and J.K. Simmons about a boyfriend who gets dumped and her ex-girlfriend's dad shows up asking him to help find her.
What the hell is J.K. Simmons and Emile Hirsch doing?
I think this trailer absolutely works, though. I like the premise. I like the humor in it. And I kind of like the overall tone in this, the whole thing. I don't know. I think
this looks like an instant failure.
Is this premiering on Netflix or Amazon?
I know. Like, I think this is coming out in theaters, man. I mean, this is confusing to me. This is something that Ashton Kutcher would have been in. So I don't know. I think this just looks cheap and cheesy, and I'll watch it for sure. I'm at home video, but I don't know. I mean, you thought it was kind of funny?
I kind of like these movies that all take place in the course of the night. I mean, when they're good, mm-hmm. it's like After Hours, the Martin Scorsese movie. And when they're bad, it's Adventures in Babysitting. But I mean, I like movies that take place in the course of one evening and like shit just keeps going wrong. And it's kind of madcap and satirical in a way, but the consequences are very real for its characters.
I just didn't see any humor in it.
I thought that throwing the keys at him was kind of funny.
Yeah, humorous, I guess. But I really didn't even understand the point of the plot. I mean, as you say, like the kid's broken up with this guy's daughter, and yet he insists that he goes around with him to find her, and then they go and they pick up some other guy who fucked her with his while she was living in the house. Like the daughter's basically just a whore and like running around causing problems and shit. It was like, why was this guy ever with her? And like, how like embarrassed should the dad be? Like, no wonder he doesn't really give a shit that he's going around with her ex trying to find her.
Well, this is why he raised a little so shitty daughter. She don't want to talk to him no more. That's a problem in the situation.
It just sounds so weird to me. I don't know.
It's a strange concept, but I thought the trailer worked for whatever reason. All right. Let's talk about A Cure for Wellness, the Gore Verbinski directed somewhat horror film. To me, this looks like basically this kid in it was in Funny Games, looks like Leonardo DiCaprio.
Right. Doesn't that bother you though? In this trailer, wait a minute.
What was the one he did with Shutter Island?
Yeah, Shutter Island. That's what I was saying. It like rubs you the wrong way when he gets to the insane asylum. They do some of the angles, you're just like, oh no, it looks like someone photoshopped Leonardo DiCaprio Shutter Island or something into this trailer.
But Verbinski's got such an eye for shots. There are some beautiful looking things here. He does horror well. I thought the first Rings was extremely effective back in the day. Mm-hmm. You're not a fan of the Verbinski?
I am. I just think that he's, as a director and as a storyteller, he tends to go on too long and too far. These are the problems with both the Rings, really, even though the Ring was good, but especially like Pirates of the Caribbean stuff.
It's funny because I thought Shutter Island went so far over the top that it became almost self-parody. Well,
it did too, but it wasn't a Verbinski movie.
Yeah, but I just, you know,
so, but I agree with you on that one too, yeah, as well. So yeah, altogether, this trailer kind of, I don't know, I feel like this would maybe, seems like a slow burn and maybe too slow for me.
It looked, I was surprised that Verbinski's name was on. I thought it was going to be kind of
Me too. It seemed more independent-y, kind of.
Yeah, I thought it was even foreign. I didn't know it was, I hadn't heard about it.
Yeah.
All right, next we had The Lost City of Z starring Charlie Hunnam. How do you say his
name? I know,
I
have no idea. I just don't. Hunnam?
I'm gonna call him Hummus. Hunnam? The guy from Hunnam? Son of Anarchy. Pacific
yeah, I have
Rim,
no idea.
This guy is our new King Arthur.
Sure.
And this is an Amazon exclusive or Amazon Prime direct film. And I read the title of this. I thought, hey, this we got like a Drake's Uncharted type movie going on here. What's going on with this? It looks like an action film. And this looks more in the vein of Terrence Malick type movies. Conquering, you know, even Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness, you know, going upstream and into the heart of the jungle. Not much of a trailer here, just some snippets, but intriguing. And the kind of movie that you would expect to premiere on these kind of channels, because you wouldn't put on your shoes and brave the winter weather to go watch something like this at a theater. You just wouldn't, you know. It reaches way more people on streaming.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. Especially if it's going to, I don't know how, what this is going to be like necessarily. It does look pretty action-y though. So, but it doesn't really have those, you know, for being out in the wilderness and going up the river and all that stuff, it didn't really appear to be incredibly cinematic.
No, it didn't have those
so
shots.
It wasn't something that I necessarily need to see. I mean, it's nicely photographed and everything, but it just doesn't look like something I would need to see on a big screen.
It looks low-key is what it looked like to me. Like, oh, okay, yeah. That makes sense. This is a second-tier, not necessarily a B-movie, but a second-tier theatrical production is the best way to describe it. And not something that was meant for it, like Spectral, which is meant for the big screen, but plays better on the home screen, like you said.
Yeah.
I'd watch this, though. This is the reason why they have these channels. Back in the day, you know, when you had infamous things like Captain America or the Fantastic Four that never materialized, but you saw trailers for them.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, I saw a trailer. I'll never forget. I went to go see Double Impact in 1991 in a theater in L.A., and there was a trailer for Beastmaster 2. And I remember kept asking my mom, like, when did Beastmaster come out? I wanted to see it. And then one day it just was on home video. And that was a pretty common occurrence back there. And now they're just doing it with these streaming avenues in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Streaming has fully become the new video houses, right? Or video stores, really. And they're all buying their own stuff and stocking it. So you're getting straight to video stuff again, and at least it's not, I mean, I'm glad that we're over the hump where we can just buy all Asylum type movies, you know, that level stuff and fill up our categories and say, we have 8,000 movies. And you're like, yeah, but none of them are any good.
Yeah.
At least now they're spending some money and we're getting, you know, some oddities and some weird things. And, if you look at their television side of things, they're doing really well, I think. So once they kick that into gear with the movies, we should be good to go, right? I mean, if they start doing stuff at that level
on those avenues, I don't want just the high class stuff. I can get that on my HBO streaming app or on my Showtime streaming app.
Well, that's why they're doing things special, right? Just for them.
But I also want those Asylum ones available to me if I want to watch them on the Netflix and the Amazon, because that's what I mean. The late night Saturday movies, if you will.
I agree with you on that, but I'm just saying that there was a while where they were buying up. Buying up stuff worse than that, right? I mean, we could go through some of the Maverick stuff, and they were buying some from companies that, I mean, it's literally, you know, movies that were shot on VHS, you know, in people's backyards and stuff. I mean, we're not even talking the class of the Asylum if you want to, but at least those are watchable, you know, 80% of the time. They used to have stuff on Netflix and things that are just unwatchable. And you still find that shit out there, right? Those are all the free ones. Not necessarily Crackle, but there are other, if you have a Roku or you can get channels with just free movies and they're ad supported and stuff, but the movies on there are generally, it's the shit that Netflix doesn't even want anymore.
Yeah,
they're really, really bad. bad stuff. But I don't know. I mean, with a movie like Lost City of Z, you couldn't, as we say, you couldn't even really release it in the theaters, though, right? So wouldn't it, it just makes more sense that these guys buy it. I mean, you can imagine like Aguirre, The Wrath of God, right? So that's not going to be released in theaters.
Well, I mean, this could also have been like a TV movie back in the 90s, you know, or a miniseries, which they no longer do. So unless it's a huge event.
Fair enough, but at least you have some place, like I said, like Aguirre, The Wrath of God, right? You're not, no one's going to go see that anywhere. But this being released on like Amazon, like this is, it's going to garner, and I'm not comparing the two necessarily because it's probably nothing like the other one.
Right.
But I mean, you know, as far as like cult stuff goes, you know, it's hard to find like Aguirre for a long time. Like with this, you'll be able to find, it'll be at your fingertips for like ever, basically.
Sure. Yeah. This will be around. These movies, especially ones that are financed by these parent streaming services, are front and center for a long, they're not going anywhere. They'd be available the entire time that streaming service is available.
Yeah. So it's nice. At least there's a place where some things can find a home now where they're more easily accessible than they ever would have been before.
I wish they would release these viewing numbers. Like, how many people watched The Do-Over compared to the assassination movie that Kevin James did? You know, things like that. I would love to know. I just would love to know, like, what kind of viewership things like this really got.
Yeah, me. I mean, I kind of wonder, just from those few movies that they've made, it feels like the whole Sandler deal was maybe not such a good deal.
Yeah, maybe.
You know? I was like, maybe that wasn't such a good thing. You know, they need to really step that up.
Well, he better get back into the theatrical game, or he might not be welcome back in the theatrical realm. So
yeah, he could be fine on Netflix, but I mean, make something good again, right? I mean, something really good.
Well, The Do-Over was the closest thing we got to a real movie.
It was okay, but it was super cheap and just kind of felt like a phoned-in thing a lot of the times.
Which is a lot of what these movies on these streaming services have felt like that are made specifically for them, which is what I hope this last
But the TV side of things hasn't, right? I mean, look at any of the Marvel stuff on Netflix. It's
tits,
you know, it's straight up really good stuff. Yeah, so if they could translate that over into the movie side, they'd be set to go, you know.
I agree 100% on that.
But then again, that's Marvel.
Oh, sure. Got a last pump there?
I had to get one out there. I didn't realize you were, you know, the streams got crossed.
I tried to pull that.
Sometimes it happens.
Yeah, a little late pull out there, buddy. You missed time to pump. All right, well, that's going to close out 313. We want to thank you all for joining us on another episode of the Movie Mavericks podcast. As always, we want to thank you guys for listening on Stitcher, iTunes, TalkShoe, wherever else you may be getting these podcasts. Always thank you guys for the support. Check out MovieMavericks.com for the latest reviews. iTunes, rate the show. Let us know what you think about it. As always, you can reach us at Trevor or Jason at Movie Mavericks. Speaking for Trevor, I'm Jason Rugard. We are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!